Well, hi, everybody. I am Dennis, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. As Peter said, I've been in the program 5 years, actually about five and a half now. And like many people who have been in the 12-step program, I would have to say it is a godsend, and I'm extremely grateful for the changes that it's given me. And it just gave me a totally different perspective on how to look at life compared to all of the things that I'd learned in school and church and anywhere else. I qualify for Al-Anon because there are different reasons, and the main one is that I grew up in a home. My father, when I was a small child, well, throughout all my childhood and adolescence, was a very heavy drinker, and he was under a lot of stress, and there were a lot of mood swings on his part. When he was drunk, anything could go, and when he was sober, sometimes he was in a rage and very much a control freak. And also, when he was sober, sometimes he could be absolutely wonderful. So with all this range of things that he showed me, I was in a constant mood swing myself, especially because these were in my development years. My mother is not an alcoholic, but she would be the Al-Anon candidate. I guess you could say control freak, very self-righteous, especially through her religion. When she was unhappy, she would react this way. And so throughout the childhood and adolescence, I think that I was always experiencing a lot of anger, a lot of fear, a lot of sadness, all at the most extreme that those emotions could be. I'm the oldest of four children. I have a brother and two sisters, and there would be a lot of rivalry. Things were very intense, and sometimes to the point of being very hateful. And I think, you know, this could come from the fact that there wasn't enough love to go around, or it could only go to some people and not to others, and you had to compete for it. And in addition to growing up with all of that, there is this business of being gay growing up in small towns. I grew up in one town, a population of 2,000 near Sarnia, and another town of 5,000 between Kingston and Belleville. And so with all the craziness in the family and all the intense feelings, it was also dealing with these feelings that I was going through. Now, first, I always knew I was different from other boys just by the way people were talking to me and reacting to me. You know, boys aren't supposed to do that and all this nonsense. And when I did hit my teenage years and was starting to have these intense feelings, I was totally confused. And when I first heard about homosexuality, it was good and it was bad. Now, on the one hand, there was all the homophobia that I would hear about it because of the negative reaction to it. But the good side was that I knew it at least existed and that there were other people like me, and that I could look forward to a life when I would get out of small town Ontario and into a city where apparently all this homosexual stuff is going on. So, I guess there was a lot of endurance during my teen years. Another way that I qualify for Al-Anon is that, now, my father, I sometimes say problem drinker or heavy drinker, and from what I know of the definition of a clinical alcoholic, I'm not exactly sure where he is. But on both sides of my family, there were a lot of clinical alcoholics, I think a total of five uncles and one aunt. Three uncles died of their alcoholism. One has been sober for about 15 years, and I don't know if he still goes to AA. He might show some what they call the dry drunk symptoms. One other uncle died in an accident, and an aunt is currently so sick, the doctors said bluntly, if she takes another drop, she will be dead. And within the past year, she has nearly died twice, and I think maybe she's come through some spiritual experiences that have kept her alive. She's very different in how she is with people now. So during that period in my teen years, a lot of relatives did die, and I was very unhappy as a child. I couldn't relate to the other kids, especially when I was a teenager. And I started to take the religion that I was raised in very seriously. And Al-Anon people, now I can't speak for everybody, but I can speak for myself and what I've read of other experiences and heard of other experiences, that we tend to get into things and be very intense about them. And so This was, well, the Catholic religion, and we know what they say about homosexuality, so I had a lot of inner conflict going on, and that was driving me kind of crazy. By the time I eventually did leave my parents' home, I went to the University of Waterloo, where I took the math and computer program in the co-op field. And it was, I guess, sad because I thought this was where I was going to get all this life. I don't know, I somehow, you know, as a teenager growing up in the 70s, I emulated that character Mary Richards on TV and thought, oh, city life, this looks so great. And when I got to campus, I heard all these big stories and thought it would be a lot of fun. And it ended up not being that much fun, and I was disappointed in a lot of ways. And maybe because, there was a lot of wild heterosexual life, but it seemed that the gay scene was still very closeted and it was very difficult to find people. So I, just like also in my teen years, work is another of my compulsions, or it was at the time. And I would tend to bury myself in my work. Also to mention, although I've never been a chemical substance addict or had any experience with that, I've kind of had every other kind of addiction. And food was one of them, and in fact it was the first addiction that I got involved in as a kid, with the reaction to the family life and handling things like fear and anger and going to school and all the stress I felt there. I'd really, you know, pile in a lot of food. And between the ages of 6 and 12, I was quite overweight, and then because of all the reactions from other kids who were horribly cruel about that kind of thing, and some adults as well, it was a vicious circle, because then I would be very emotionally upset about it, and what do I do when I'm emotionally upset? I eat some more, and it just kept going and going and going. But by the time I hit puberty, I got tall, and I guess the width was more proportionate to the height, because the habit was still there. But it moderated a bit. So in university, there was a very pivotal point, I think, in the relationship with my parents and seeing how bad it was. Now, this was, I think, the late 70s, when everybody was pretty well rebellious, and I felt kind of out of it because I was such a good little boy. I had my first work term, and there were a lot of disappointments in that, too, because I thought, oh, I get into the math and accounting program, and it's going to be really interesting, and I'll have this fantastic job. I was put in a corner where I had nothing to do. It was a Crown Corporation, and these were the days when Crown Corporations could get away with hiring somebody and not having them do anything. But anyway, I had some realizations about myself, and that was, I really started to feel an urge and an interest in theater and in acting. And this would later be confirmed from tarot card readers, palmists, people who could just read me. And it turned out in the future that it was a correct insight about myself. So when I went back to school on the second term, with all the disappointment and the depressions, I just couldn't handle the workload. And I was hinting to my parents and everybody else around me of dropping out of this program and getting into something else. It didn't necessarily have to be theater, but just something that I could find more fulfilling, because the math and accounting program wasn't doing it. So to ease it a bit, I dropped the calculus and algebra course in the curriculum, and thinking I would just pick it up later on. I guess I could see some of the insane control issues in my family. My father just had a fit. He was absolutely convinced, in a paranoid way, that because I dropped these courses, that employers wouldn't hire me. And I tried to convince him, but I will pick this up. And how are they going to know that I dropped these courses? Well, I mean, he was in his state, and Mom was pretty well supporting him. So I guess I was shocked by their reaction, and I didn't have any kind of support system at the time, and I didn't really have any other direction to go. So I kind of caved into them, and I stayed in the program, the math program at Waterloo. I would later switch the major to computer science, but I guess fulfilled their desire for me to get this degree. Now, that, I could look back and see that that was, I guess, not one of the real stages of life where you rebel against your parents and you do what you want to do. It would later come back to haunt me, and I will get to that later in my story as the time progresses. Now, during this time at university, I did have work terms in the cities, and that's where I did come out of the closet. Now, I think because of what I was exposed to now, you know, there was the family parties and the reunions, and I guess I was always around people who had this belief that you could only have a really good time when you were really drunk. And in the small towns, there's a lot of that mentality as well. And I think because of what I saw happening to relatives, I resisted very hard against becoming alcoholic, because I knew I had the emotional drive that I could be that way. And I guess it was strong will because of the uncle's example. And I'm grateful that my parents were frank about what was happening with them. So when I came out, it was strictly through the bars, and I got into the bar culture. This is around the late 70s and early 80s. And this would show me another compulsive side of myself. Now, it's not really an Al-Anon term, but many people in Al-Anon or who have written about it will talk about codependence. And that can mean different things. Now, for me, I know, like, I never had any physical or sexual experience with anyone as a teenager, but the yearning was extremely strong, especially for the age that I was at. And it would be sort of yearning for love and for the physical need as well. So I would come on to people pretty quickly in bars. Now, I knew I had a boundary. I didn't really want to go all the way with sex. I was kind of scared of it, or doing that quickly. But I would sort of get people to take me to their homes, and there were some, I guess, a lot of manipulation on both parts. And in one case, I was sexually assaulted. But then, in an odd way, like this was after we had become kind of close, and each of us had a strong yearning. Now, I found out later he had also been assaulted in many ways too in his past, which I guess makes sense. And we were together for about 2 months, and it was a very intense love relationship. We had very strong feelings for each other, but very different ideals about sex. I was kind of holding back, and I guess now I might be able to say that he was a sex addict. Now, of course, that was not part of the language back then. This was in the late 70s, early 80s, when the sexual revolution was still very strong, and I started to feel very lonely about that because of where I was within it. The AIDS crisis didn't come yet, and I think everybody, like heterosexual too, was just constantly involved in it, and I felt left out again because my standards and lifestyle were very different. Now, I would eventually sort of find ways of compromise, like once we got familiar with this term of safe sex, and that worked for me for a while. And physically, you know, I was safe and it was good, but I could see there was an emotional pattern that was somewhat destructive. I was constantly going out to the bars. Sometimes, especially after somebody dumped me, I would be going out, and I didn't really have a need for sex. I think it was the need to be liked or to need to be accepted again, because I was so devastated by being rejected. And, you know, just in the surroundings constantly of the loud music, the darkness and the smokiness, and everybody just standing around looking at each other. I know that has had an effect on me over time. And if somebody gave me attention, now, you know, you've heard of the inner child. I know I have that, but I also had an inner Sally Field where I think, you like me, you really like me. And of course, it didn't matter whether I liked them, because at that time I was not supposed to have an opinion, and that's an Al-Anon trait too, is everything is about other people and whether they like us and what they think of us. And so I think throughout the years, you know, since then, one time I did do something that was very unsafe. That was in 1984, and it was almost suicidal, and I think it was just out of the yearning and then this willingness to cave in and please somebody. And I know that he had been promiscuous too, and you know, I always knew there was this possibility. Now, 6 years later, that was the only year that I did something unsafe. And in 1990, it was a very lonely experience when I decided to go and take the test. I did not have any support system at all, which I would never do again. I would try and find one. But it turned out okay. I was negative. But later on, I would, within another 12-step program, start to get a hold of this situation, and I'm doing very well in that program where I'm keeping away from the cruising scene and just finding in very simple ways that I can relate to nice men, and, you know, I can talk to them without trying to manipulate them into bed or making wedding plans, and... It's like the program is, one day at a time and easy does it, and if my higher power's plan for me is to be with somebody, that'll come, and I'll just sort of enjoy whatever I can today in relating to people in a nice and simple way. Now, getting back to the university years and all this work stuff, I did eventually graduate, and I got my math and computer degree, and then I went to Ottawa, and I got a job at Bell Canada. And that was as a computer and programmer analyst. Now, my parents, in addition to other things, were, I mean, there's a lot of dysfunction, and they have good characteristics. I, you know, that's part of the part of the whole program of them. They're also very radical right-wingers, and I used to think conservatively myself, and today I had this crazy notion that I might start another 12-step program called Adult Children Survivors of Parents Who Are Enthusiastic Supporters of Mike Harris, but I dropped it because the acronym was too long. But anyway, sometimes I too get a little too intense about my politics and have to sort of sit back on that. So in Ottawa, with this job, I found there was a lot of intensity, and I was reacting with a lot of fear and somewhat not feeling very grown up yet. And I did get a lot of help through therapy, and I got involved in Hindu teachings. There was this yoga ashram in Massachusetts, and it helped a lot with my healing. There were ways where I found it wasn't really working. And I was okay for a while. Now, when I started to get success in my life, of course, I was very intense again, and I had to do everything at once and do all this healing. It was too much, and I was getting back pains, and things were... It was just too fast, where I couldn't even enjoy anything. My first year at Bell Canada, I realized, you know, I thought this was going to be interesting, this city life, but it isn't, and this corporate career is really not for me. That's when I guess I mentioned that right-wing stuff earlier, because it was after working in a large corporation where I saw, I mean, my perspective changed, and then I went over to being very left-wing, probably because of that, or at least for me, that was one of the bigger reasons. So when I realized it wasn't for me, I certainly liked the money they gave. I mean, there it was great. And I got this idea of starting to build a nest egg where eventually I would take a sabbatical. And I did well with that. I learned all these things about RRSPs and tax breaks and was doing really well. I didn't live sparsely. I also had some great experiences traveling to some very cosmopolitan cities I'd always dreamed of going to, and that was extremely fulfilling. Sometimes I think back on those experiences, and I still get the goosebumps, and I'm quite happy that I did that. When the unhappiness in the corporate life hit, I started to at least take some courses in theater. And I was involved with other personal growth at the time. I think it was still before I got into Al-Anon. And there was one teacher, it was that method acting, which can be pretty intense. The teacher said something which really helped me, because there was this conflict. You know, I wanted to do it and really get fulfilled in the art side of it. But then with all this adult child stuff, there's all this yearning to be famous and yearning for the applause. And I could really grab onto that and miss the whole point of the inner fulfillment. And he said that there are many, he listed some names, and some of them were famous, and he said, these people do this not because of fame, not because of money, but because of personal growth. And if you keep the focus on doing it just for personal growth, you will at least be satisfied, because then you'll get something. There's no guarantee for the fame or the money. If it comes along, great, but if not, still keep the focus on the growth. And I decided to let that stay with me and to just... in whatever area of life, and it's and I'm quite happy I did. Now, when I reached, I think, a financial goal where I could have pulled the pin, I was starting to realize I'm not emotionally ready. I am still scared shitless of what my parents would say or do. And as it would turn out later on, I was probably right to be scared shitless and had to be emotionally prepared for it. So there I was, staying in this job that I hated, and by now corporate culture at Bell Canada and apparently everywhere was just going nuts. And I was being very workaholic, you know, working a lot of hours, and I think constantly being afraid of bosses, but then also being very resentful of the whole thing. And one time, I really botched a project badly. And this was so odd for me, because I was always good at work. You know, I always thought I was a social failure, but at work, that's where I do well. And when work failed, well, I was just nearly devastated. What is happening to me? Now, I had seen pamphlets in Al-Anon. One was called, Did You Grow Up With a Problem Drinker? And there were 20 questions, and I answered yes to more than half of them. But at the time, I was still in kind of a state of denial about my father being an alcoholic. You know, a lot of people are, but not him. But this is part of the family disease of denial that I was playing out. But when nothing else seemed to be working, I decided to check out the Al-Anon and go to one of their introductory meetings. And they say, go to 6 meetings before you decide. And things, I didn't know there was a piece there, something that it just seemed to really hit. And now there were no drinkers in my life at that time. Like, then I was sort of the acting out workaholic, which is probably the result of, you know, having grown up in a dysfunctional family. But I liked it, and this analytical side of me wanted to make the connection. Well, how does this drinking thing have to do with my personality and all these characteristics? But another voice, probably my higher power, said, ah, shut up and just go to the meeting. So I kept going, and... there was something said there that made me realize this is the place for me. There was something I was ashamed of and couldn't mention. And people there said this is a trait of either adult children or people who have been with someone for a long time who are actively drinking. And that is constant thoughts of suicide. And although I never made any attempts in my life, I think I've constantly lived with that. And... So that was an inspiration to keep going back. And I love the way the meetings are. Nowhere can I have a place where I can talk uninterrupted, unevaluated, negatively that is, and know that nobody's going to gossip about it. And it's such a treasure and a gift. And it was interesting, too, because another so-called Al-Anon characteristic is trying to be the caretaker and analyzing other people's problems. And when people would start to speak, this voice in my head would diagnose their problem, and I'd want to jump in and tell them what to do, but then I realized that's not in the rule, so I had to sit back. And I was glad for that, because in time I would see it's nice not to have to be responsible, because I think I was driven by this need or this belief that I was responsible for other people's feelings and making them feel better and all of that. So... a lot of success in the program. I think one of the first signs was how, when I went back to my family, I would not play my role of being sarcastic or pushing my view at people or taking sides in these intense arguments. My parents have always had an intense marriage. And I would notice that when they would see I wasn't playing my part, they would sort of calm down too. And then that's one of the ways I think they say that Al-Anon works is, you know, you change and put the focus on yourself, and in some strange spiritual way, other people will change around you. And you'll also invite different people in your life too that are healthier. In late 91, the work situation was ballistic, and I knew my own workaholism was bad enough, but I was working for a workaholic. And we can imagine, and everyone around us was workaholics. And this is in the field of computers, too, where I know it is quite common in that field. It was just so awful. And so, now, I know there are stories in Alcoholics Anonymous where they talk about the bottoming out, where somebody really told them off and showed them what it was. And for me, because of this working situation, I had nearly bought some New Year's Eve plans with somebody. And he told me off. And because I was so constantly just around these Bell Canada dysfunctional people, I couldn't think any other way, because that's the way they are within the organization, too. They only think the Bell Canada way. So I was grateful to have this person from the outside world give me this wisdom that I was sick. And that's when it hit me. I have to do something. It's gone far enough now. And I knew the nest egg that I had saved away was big enough that I could take this sabbatical. So I took steps with a friend, like, okay, I'm going to do it. And so we just took, I think there were about seven things I had to do, and I ended up doing it quite rapidly. I remember the exact date I gave the resignation, January 13th, 1992. And I'd already set up the meeting with the boss, and there was this blue book, One Day at a Time in Al-Anon, and I thought, curiously, I just wonder what's on the page for today. And it was something about, we all deserve dignity in life, and we have to do the things that we have to do to take back our dignity, even if it means stepping on people's toes or whatever. And I can't remember exactly what it said, but it was just one of those weird spiritual coincidences where it fit exactly what I had set out to do that day. And thank God Al-Anon taught me about being more peaceful with people. I can be very hostile, and my thoughts might be hostile, but when I had the meeting with the boss, and I think she knew it was coming, I put it on a person-to-person level, like not thinking Bell Canada stuff or speaking about Bell Canada stuff, but talking from human to human. And, you know, even pointing out to her, you know, well, hey, Wendy, you know, you might want to think of doing this too someday, and she could see it in herself, but it was nice to have that. What was really interesting, now I had to do this because my health and my life and my spirituality were just going to hell, but there was an interesting thing about it. Like, everybody there was wrapped up in this, I guess, rat race where, you know, they'd all have houses and cars, and I guess they needed the benefits and the pension plans and the big salaries of Bell, and I just did it differently, and it shocked the hell out of everybody. And after I resigned, four other people resigned within 6 months after that. So I don't know if I can take credit for starting a trend, but I'd like to. So since then, it was another weird miracle where somebody called me up and said, oh, a friend of mine is doing this play, and I know you like theater. Would you like to do it? And, you know, this brought back to all that stuff about theater I mentioned earlier. So I did the play. And it was very hard at first because there were a lot of dysfunctions within the group, and but we pulled through. And I ended up doing more community theater in Ottawa while I was on this sabbatical. Now, part of me was still afraid and, you know, thinking all those thoughts, oh, but you should be having a regular career and a regular salary and a regular job. But the fact was the money was there and I could do these things. I also took a course in holistic healing called Reiki, and I saw it in some books back there about it, and so I've done a bit of healing people as well. I did a little entrepreneurial project in Ottawa before I left, when I went to people's homes. When it became clear to my parents that this was not a temporary thing and I was in fact going to redirect my life, the shit hit the fan with my father, because I think, though he intended well, he was just totally afraid that, you know, my life would be gone if I lived this way. And his control freak stuff was coming up, and my inner child was reacting to it, too. In fact, I was very sick for a few days after I got a letter from him. But I wrote back and explained everything, and I wrote it in a way where he understood it. And then I found out that Mom had told him I go to Al-Anon, and so then I wrote him another letter about that, because I didn't want his interpretation of it just being my mother's, who might be quite blameful to him about it. And I know she kind of thought that, and I just needed to let him hear it from my viewpoint. And it helped me clear a lot of issues with him where I feel complete with him, so that if he were to die, I wouldn't feel there's any... There is some unfinished business, but I think because of the dysfunction, it's as good as it gets. I had the same kind of experience when I decided to come out to my mother. Now, coming out to family members was, I think, what brought me to Al-Anon, because it showed me how dysfunctional the family was. And I reacted really sadly to it. I guess, you know, we hear all these wonderful coming-out experiences, like a made-for-TV movie, when everybody's also, you know, they all come through in the end. But in a dysfunctional family, it wasn't like that. And so first it was my sisters, and they didn't give me the support I needed, and then I dropped it. But I did get that kind of support from some female cousins who are very, very much supporters. And then I decided I would come out to Mom. Now, the evening I did, now she said her things, and I think I felt like I was 5 years old again, and it's amazing how much the mother-child relationship can do that. When I went to bed, I had to fight with my will all suicidal thoughts that were coming back to the surface, things that I thought were gone away, but it was very strong, and I think I realized just how vulnerable I really was. And letters between her and me were written back and forth, which just added to the intensity. And it was very difficult. Now, I think eventually there were some resolutions made, and it can be quite peaceful. In the end, I'm glad that I did it, but I know there are a lot of scars and wounds from it. And I think for the time being, like whether I come out to my father and my brother or not, is just something that I would surrender to my higher power. It's very odd. But as it is now, through the theater projects, I think like with step three about surrendering the life to the higher power, I read a book called The 12 Steps to Happiness, and I was inspired by this author's interpretation of step three, and that is what you feel inside is your higher power, and all that stuff that resists against it is just all the brainwashing of governments or business or parents or teachers, whatever, churches. So listen to that, and I think, like, I really do surrender, and just what I want to do each moment, I let myself do that, and I've let go of a lot of burdens that I realized were unnecessary. I just didn't need to hold on to them anymore. And I recently completed step four, and I realized through that that, you know, I do hold back from people, and there's a lot of mistrust. I know, too, there was good reason for it, and I know part of my recovery has been that I had to ease out from my life people who were very harmful to me. But to follow up on that, I need to also bring in people who are good, and I'm tending to procrastinate on that a little bit. But so I moved from Toronto a year ago. This is after, actually through one of the theater projects I had in Ottawa. Now, this is a strange coincidence. So one of them actually brought me to New York in doing the same production. And I spent 2 months there, and I was going to experiment and see what it was like. And I loved the city and a lot of things there, but I knew it wouldn't be very practical for me. And I think from what I saw of the theater people there, it's very driven, and there is this, I think, quick desire for fame. And I really loved our production and the cast in it, but there were a lot of tense situations, and it was wild. Like, there was one horrible fight that everybody had, which was like in those movies like All About Eve or Bullets Over Broadway, and I always thought that was fictional, but there I was in New York and thought, my God, it's true. And while it was happening, I was in a corner saying the Serenity Prayer 1,000 times. But anyway, that I was complete with that, and I don't know what kind of life I'm going to have with regard to income. I'm getting a little bit of parts as extras in the movies here and TV, and I have yet to prepare a monologue and try the theater scene, and I'm also procrastinating on doing something with the Reiki energy healing. But I'm also learning there are a lot of things I love about this city, and there are things that I can do even if they're not generating income, but I think I still have to come back and realize, you know, when you need it, it'll come to you, and you don't really need it right now, and you've got to learn how to have some fun. So There's so much to learn, and as I say, I love the 12 steps. It's a very unique approach to life, and totally different from anything that I ever learned in another spiritual program. If I miss a meeting, I don't have to go to confession if we're missing it. And and it's, I don't know, that there's so much more to go on with, and the keep it simple approach, and being very easy, and just learning to be easy on myself, and accepting that if life is happening this way, it's the way the higher power intended it to. I still have work to do on that, but I'm very grateful, and this is my first gratitude conference, but it was an honor to be asked to be your speaker, so thank you very much for listening.